and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, Shasta County. I'm saying good morning, but this is a pre-recorded show, and I want to thank Christina for coming in on a day off to be here. So thank you, Christina, for that.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure.
All right. So I wanted to make sure, though, that this last show of 2023 was recorded, and I didn't play an old one. But before I get to that and get into what we're going to be doing, I want to say hello. My mother, Chris, is like shaking her head no, but my mom is in the studio with me. Hello, Mom.
Hello, Kevin.
So she is not happy with me. She did not want to be on the radio. Do you want to say hi to Uncle Bud?
Hi, Uncle Bud.
Yeah, well, it's not your uncle; it's your brother. But that's okay. So, Mom, you can go ahead and just push the mic away, and I won't make you say anything else.
Thank you.
She's wanted to come in and watch a show being recorded, and so we felt like this was the day. So, what we're going to do today is we are going to jump in, and we're going to look back on the first year in office for me of 2023, and then we're also going to hit on a few things going forward to 2024 that I'll be focusing on. And normally I'd give you a weather update from Weather NorCal and Mike Kruger, but I asked Mike, I said, hey, Mike, would you mind giving give me a weather update? And he said, man, that is too far out. I don't want to do that to people. So he said, you're going to have to just roll without a weather one for this week. And I said, hey, that's okay. I'll still plug your service, Weather NorCal. And because, again, this is my show, and there is no paid advertisers. I take care of all that myself. So that's why you see a lot of times Vista Real Estate, or you hear Vista Real Estate as one of the commercials. So, and another thing, too, if you have a business and you're already advertising on KCNR and you'd like me to plug your business, and let me know, because I could always run your commercial during my show. So we're going to jump in. Looking back on 2023, my first year in office with Supervisor Kellstrom, Supervisor Garmin, Supervisor Rickert, and, of course, Chair Jones. One of the very first, and I've highlighted just a few different things I want to cover that I'm proud of that we did, and also what it taught me. One of the big first decisions we made as a board was to terminate our voting machine contract and go to hand count elections. And we got a lot of flack for, quote unquote, not having a plan in place when we canceled our machines. And that's completely untrue. The plan all along was to hand count the minute we terminated those. And I learned a lot through this process. But the reason I made the decision originally, or at least for my particular vote, was because when I saw the contract and the cost to lease the machines, it didn't make any sense that we would spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to lease the equipment when actually we could purchase it outright. And when I talked to Kathy Darling Allen, our clerk and registrar of voters, she actually liked the HART system better. And I said, well, if we were going to make a switch, does it make more sense just to switch now? And she says, well, I'm fine going to HART, because that is what I'd prefer over the one we currently had anyway. So by doing that, we actually saved quite a bit of money by purchasing them outright. And, of course, the detractors, of course, spun that like it was going to cost us millions of dollars to go a different direction. But one thing that decision showed me is it showed me right off the bat how the state, much like Lucy in Charlie Brown, how she would move the football and Charlie Brown would go back to kick it. And every time he'd get close to kicking it, she'd move it. And then, of course, he'd fly in the air and land on his back and inevitably say good grief. And then he would do it again. And what shocked me was seeing how the state really doesn't want us to have local control. So for me, having a decision so big early in my first year it gave me a baptism by fire, really, to see what we are up against here in Shasta County and other counties in California when it comes to doing things that we believe represent our constituents and our voters. The state doesn't care. The state absolutely doesn't care what we want on local levels. They have their mission, their marching orders from whoever they're getting them from, whether it be the governor or somebody else. But they do not want local control. And what we saw with AB 969 to a core has changed me forever, because now I realize this fight. And I hate to I don't know if you'd say, grandulize it. That's not a word, but I just made it up. But it can't be understated how important it is for local control and us to understand we are up against the state that hates our way of life here in Shasta County. So, again, that decision with hand counting ballots and then, of course, doing away with machines, that was circumvented by AB 969. I believe that fight isn't ultimately over. I think that should fall into the SB 90 category, where the state should have to pay for those costs, at least in Shasta County, not the other 57 counties, but at least Shasta County, because they made us do something that we chose not to do and had every legal right to do it. So we'll see. But that was the first one. Another one was the Second Amendment resolution. And what that was about, and I wasn't actually going to put this on there except for Gavin Newsom recently signing Senate Bill 2, which basically prohibits carrying on state, school, and government property and buildings. So because of the Bruin case as it relates to the Second Amendment, what the state, again, is doing, and we're staying on that theme of local control, what the state basically is doing is saying, hey, you can go ahead and get a CCW, but you basically can't carry anywhere but your own house, which is crazy. And to me, that Second Amendment resolution that we passed, which was basically said, is we're not going to enforce anything that is unconstitutional as it relates to the legal, lawful, constitutional carrying of our guns. And, we can't open carry here in Shasta County. Constitutionally, we could, but our sheriff decides, really makes that call, which is fine. He's the elected sheriff. He can make that determination. But when it comes to the concealed carry, for many of us that have permits, it's crazy that because of SB 2, we're basically not going to get to carry on any establishment or building that says that firearms are legal. But when you talk about county and other buildings, that troubles me, because now if you're a person that, let's say, wants to go to the Board of Supervisors meeting and carry lawfully with your concealed carry permit, you no longer can. And that really bothers me. So when we made the vote for the Second Amendment resolution, of course, if you remember or you follow closely, I abstained. I needed more information. I wanted to understand more about just actually liability, not just personally, but for the county as well. And again, that was a very, very early vote. I think that would have been my second or third meeting. But what I've learned, and again, in this process, is in these first two votes that we're talking about, with elections and the Second Amendment resolution, if the state doesn't like what you're doing at a local level, they'll just pass something, and whether it's unconstitutional or not, and they're gonna move their agenda forward. So, again, that was the second thing. The next thing I want to hit on was the Zog fire. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this this one in particular. The Zog fire, I won't say vote, but really what it was is we had a gentleman come up in public comment, Brian Collier, and he's an IGO resident. He managed, I believe, the IGO Inn out there. Wasn't the owner, but he managed the IGO Inn. And he came up and just had some questions about the disbursement of the $50 million settlement that PG&E gave or awarded basically the DA, and the DA had the jurisdiction and the ability to say where that money went. And it troubled me when he came up and spoke and said, and he made some claims about, where it went, how it was done, and it just didn't make sense to me. So as I asked questions, I asked for a presentation on that. And again, you know, I had to actually subpoena stuff from our own county council because I wasn't able to get things. And I haven't let this go. Now, we, Supervisor Garmon sent a letter himself, I believe, to Attorney General Rob Bonta. But then we sent one as a board as well. And, again, like you to assume, it's crickets. We don't hear anything. And, again, staying with the same theme of local control, you'd think your attorney general would respond in some facet when the board of supervisors of a county, of one of the 58 counties, makes a request and we don't get anything back. So I have – if you've ever seen Shawshank Redemption and Andy Dufresne, who was played by now I'm drawing a blank, but I'm not going to get stuck on that. So Andy Dufresne is the main character, and he wants a library. So he's writing a letter every single day to the state to get a library. And finally, they award him the library, and they say, hey, quit writing us letters. You know, here's the money for your library. So I just keep emailing, and I just stay on top of it because I'm not going to let it go. And because I think there's a lot of things that were done in that process that were wrong. And a lot of people believe that as well, so they've asked me to stay on top of it, so I am. One of the things I have here is some community members put some things together for me, and this is a post-Zogfire Igo Ono community needs. So this is a list of organizations in Igo Ono that got nothing. And they're really still trying to struggle and figure out how they're going to put the pieces back together. So I want to identify these really quick because I think this is one of the things I'm not going to say that I was most proud of, but it was something that I really had to lean into and learn as much as I could about this process. And this is what I feel as elected officials we're elected to do. Now, granted, District 2 is not my district. But I look at all people of Shasta County and say, hey, you know, I represent everybody. So if there is a need and there's something I can do, I'm always going to lean in where I can. And one of the things, and I've mentioned this before, but District 1 is primarily under the, I guess you'd say, the jurisdiction of the city of Reading and the city council, because my entire district basically falls in that, except for a little bit of area, in the unincorporated area of like Pine Grove, let's say. So the very first thing, community needs. Igo Ono Community Service District. This special district provides water to the community for agricultural purposes, but in times of need, such as a fire, this is the community's most valuable life-saving resource. There would have been considerably more deaths in the Zog Fire if it weren't for the water supplied by this entity. That's my belief, as well as other people's. Misselbeck Dam is in need of major repair to ensure the future needs in times of disaster, and to repair Misselbeck Dam outlet works and removes sediment caused by erosion as a result of past wildfires from the reservoir, and that would be Rainbow Lake. So there was a dollar figure put in here that just people as a group said, hey, this is what we think this may take, and I'm not sure, I can't substantiate the actual dollar amount, but they put in $15 million is what they would guess that would take to do all of that. Igo Ono School. Again, as most of you may know, there was some funds that were, I believe they're already paid, actually, for a playground in Fela's memory. That's one of the individuals that lost their life. But this school needs funds for a secure fire suppression system. While there is talk of installing a hydrant with no secure funding, fire sprinklers have not even been discussed. There are no safe crosswalks, parking is limited, and the field is in disrepair from being used as a landing zone during the fire. You know, and I believe the safety of our children needs to be a top priority, and they pretty much destroyed that field as they parked, you know, heavy equipment and different things on it. So they put that at $1 million. The Ono Igo Community Church, because the church doors are always open in times of need, they need to provide a facility on their property where evacuees can wash clothes and shower, etc. Within this building, they would also provide the community with a functional pantry equipped with fridges and freezers for perishable donations. They also need to update their heating and air system, and they put $500,000. And again, these dollar figures are just what the various organizations have said, you know, what they really could use to update a bunch of those things. Again, there is no There is no dollar amount that they're owed. This is just what they're saying that they could use in terms of being a nonprofit in that area, that what would really, really help. The Ono Grange, 445, through their fiscal sponsor, which is the California State Grange. The county fire marshal is pressing upon this nonprofit the commercial fire code requirements, which includes a hydrant system that would supply the community in the event of a fire. This expense has become a huge financial burden, jeopardizing the rebuild altogether. The cost for installing security fencing has also gone up since the inception of the rebuild process, and the Grange needs to protect its assets. So, of course, if you're building, it has to be fenced off from possible vandals or thieves. And that's put at $500,000 as well. The Igo Ono Volunteer Fire Company, the local volunteer fire department, needs funds to turn the existing empty engine bay into a reserve station where they could wash their uniforms and equipment after being exposed to harmful toxic smoke. This would also be a place for firefighters to shower and rest if they find themselves exhausted and not able to return safely home after fighting fires or tending to other emergencies. And they put that at $500,000. Ono Junior Grangers, through their fiscal sponsor, California State Grange as well. The youth of the Ono Grange have suffered greatly, having no place to meet formally. It is appropriate that they are granted funds to help junior Grangers build slash rebuild facilities for their livestock projects and or supply them with equipment for their future livestock projects. These funds will also go towards furthering their agriculture education by building and growing a garden on the Ono Grange property for produce, in which they can use as a fundraiser. And they put $20,000. I think $20,000 for youth is a drop in the bucket, especially in that community. The Igo Ono TAP, T-A-P, Neighborhood Watch. This nonprofit has provided services to the community to make the residents feel safer by installing game cameras and helping individuals who have been victims of acts of illegal nature. They also held the account for the Katie Rainey Fund that Karen King started many years ago. These funds served only 96047 residents as a way to help with spay and neuter costs. So that is $20,000. The Eclampus Vitus Chapter Number 62. This nonprofit has been in charge of taking care of community's pioneer cemeteries in Ono and Igo. It's not a veteran cemetery. They need funds for the care and maintenance of the aforementioned areas, and they put $20,000 as a cost there. The Wintu of Northern California. This state-recognized tribe needs funds for repairs to their indigenous family cemetery, Slaughter Fan Indian Cemetery in Ono, that is listed on the historical database, $10,000. The 10th is the Nor L. Mook Wintu of Northern California. This state-recognized tribe, operating as a nonprofit at the moment, needs funds for repairs to their indigenous family cemetery, Grand Indian Cemetery in Ono. That is listed on the historical database as well, and they put that at $10,000. So, again, the two different tribes, $10,000 apiece. So if you total all of that up, those 10 nonprofits, those 10 entities, that comes to $17,580,000. And again, so coming back to the Zog fire, one of the things in government that often happens is we make a vote up there, and then it's out of sight, out of mind for a lot of different people. Once in a while, we'll have something come up that is a hot-button topic, maybe for a lot of people. The elections vote might have been one. I won't say elections. I'll say the termination of the machine contract. That would be one. Another one would be like Fountain Wind, and those are consistently in the paper or on radio shows, etc. And the Zog fire item is something that, you know, personally, I just don't think we're talking enough. We're not talking about it enough. I think that there is still answers that people are demanding within the community. And I think I will continue to ask those questions until I see some type of forward movement. I have talked to two or three different people that received money, and we're talking through some possible options to make the people of Igo Ono I don't want to say feel good, because when your community has gone through something like that, it's not about feeling good, but it is about when you look at restitution. Restitution needs to go to the people that were affected, not by organizations and entities that had nothing to do with the fire itself, yet received money. So I digress, and we'll move on from that. Three other things that all would fall under one thing would be hirings. We, as a board, made three, I would say, really, really fantastic hires in 2023. CEO Rickert just had his first 6 months, and he's been there a little over 6 months at this point. But coming from Illinois, I'm extremely, extremely thankful, proud, honored, whatever the word would be, that I got to be a part of hiring somebody of Mr. Rickert, Dave Rickert's caliber. He's going to, and I think what the public is going to see this June, when we have a new budget, and as we look at breaking ground and continually working towards getting more jail beds and the things that we're doing there, I think people are going to get a really, really good look at his talents and abilities in June when the budget hearings come up, because he's doing a lot of work on it right now. I'm excited to see the money that is freed up for the jail and just consistently streamlining processes we have at the county. He's got a phenomenal record of that at his past counties as a treasurer and then as a CFO as well. And bringing his knowledge and ability to Shasta County has been nothing short of just amazing. And when he's been there for a year, 2 years, people are going to see why I've been as excited as I've been this whole time. Another hire we made was appointing a new health officer in Dr. Mu. Again, Dr. Mu has only been there now a very short time. And in terms of the changes and things that he wants to do, it is a slow process, because when you come into a situation like that, it's not like you're able to move as quickly maybe as you'd like, as if you know running a private practice. But he's doing some positive things. I hear a lot of positive things from people that work within the county and conversations they've had with Dr. Mu and his open door policy. So that's been positive. I know he has been working on transitioning and shutting his practice down, or I should say moving towards shutting his practice down. And there are a lot of people that see Dr. Mu as their primary care provider, and I can appreciate how sensitive he is to that process and making sure his patients have a new landing spot. The third hire is our new county council, Joe Larmer. He starts in probably sometime, I think it's like April 1st is like his official date, because he gave 90 days, or that's what was requested of him in Yuba. But I know people are going to, when he's seated, and if you know any department heads that work at the county or people that work consistently with the county council's office, I encourage you, reach out to some of those people, ask them about their departments or where they are currently, and then after Joe is there for 3 to 6 months, ask how it's going with those department heads in terms of the output of getting contracts out and being just a solid department for the county. Because one thing, if you remember in our last board meeting, we talked a little bit about HHSA wanting their own attorney. And this isn't about, disparaging or saying anything about our current county council's office, but the leadership that is so desperately needed within that office, the leader of that is coming, and he's the right one. One of the things, and I didn't know him at all before recruiting him, but when I found out that another county had a superstar county council, and they were actually a graduate of Enterprise High School and actually lived here in Shasta County, I set out to find this person and find out why they're not applying in Shasta County, or have they applied in Shasta County. And one thing Joe will tell you is Yuba had asked him to be the county council long, long, long before. But for various reasons, he pushed that off, and he had been there, I think, a little less than 6 months when he chose to come to Shasta County. But You know, and the reason I'm talking about this now so much is because the I guess you'd say the propaganda paper or our crazy media, and there's a couple decent reporters locally, but they're not the ones that usually write the quote unquote the big articles. Annalisa the Scout does a pretty good job, but I'll say that they want to make something of it that it's not. And if you go down and ask any of the department heads in Yuba or the Board of Supervisors, they are not happy he's leaving, not because he was only there a few months. They're upset because they know they're losing a phenomenal, phenomenal county council. And one thing is he knows how to work. He knows how to get stuff done. And I'm super, super anxious for him to get at the helm. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. We come back. We've got about four or five more things I want to cover. Then we're going to talk a little bit about this election season coming up. So with that, we'll be right back.
Now, Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew each side that he'd be on. He never was a hero for the town he shining light, but you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say, you've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Saddle up and ring in the new year the wild, wild way at the 2023 New Year's Eve Bash in the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center. Live music from Lance Michael Cornwell will keep your boots tapping and the dance floor hopping all night long. Enjoy a delicious buffet, dessert, swag, and drink specials. The fun starts at 8 p.m. Tickets start at just $65 plus fees. Or go VIP for only $300 per couple, including a one-night stay at a luxurious hotel. For tickets or complete details, visit WindRiver.com and find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
The seasons are changing. Keeping your family healthy is important. So is the health of your car. The longevity and reliability of your vehicle depends on you to make sure your oil, radiator coolant, windshield wipers, and other vital systems have all been taken care of so your car can bring your healthy family through the seasons. Drive into Premier Oil Change today and experience the friendly oil change. Premier doesn't require an appointment, and you don't drop your car off or wait. Maintain your car warranty with our service while you stay in the comfort and safety of your own car. Enjoy a free beverage and Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Stop into a Premier Oil Change near you today. Visit us in Palisadro, in the Holiday Shopping Center, or in Redding, on Lake Boulevard, near Waterworks Park, and Anderson, across from Roundtable Pizza. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
All right, we are back. We are back. So, again, this is the last show before 2024. And we're just covering some various items. I'm going to pick right back up with ballot measures. There was two things that the board will have on the March 5th ballot, which I'm excited to be a part of for sure. Term limits, and that was sponsored by Supervisor Kellstrom. Chris ran on term limits and his belief that people should not be looking to make politics a career, or at least in one office. You know, to some degree, I have no problem if somebody wants to start on a school board, move up to city council, then maybe become a board of supervisor, then assembly, senate, so on and so forth. But when you have people that are in Congress for four terms, five terms, six terms, or, you know, 50 years or whatever Joe Biden's been in office, I think after a while it just becomes, it's time to like next man up. It's time for someone else. So some people would argue and say, hey, that, that term limit should be, that, you know, can be determined at the ballot box. And if someone wants to run a bunch of times, then, you know, they should be able to run and we just vote them out. Well, one thing is, when incumbents are in and they're in for a while, they become very, very tough to beat. And not saying that it can happen, because it does, but I definitely think term limits will get more people involved and get people involved sooner. So that'll be on the March 5th ballot. And again, you can't go wrong when people get a chance to make that decision and cast their own vote. And then another issue we have on the ballot is Charter County. And the Charter County is something that I sponsored. And I'm very, very proud of the fact that is we're going to have that where voters get to decide on March 5th. And what that whole thing is solely and only that the governor does not get to appoint if there's a vacancy on the Board of Supervisors. Now, that doesn't even go into effect if voted in until January of 25. So that has nothing to do with 2024. So if somebody dies in office, moves, is recalled, is just resigns, etc., the options, the first option is the governor does not get to appoint. So then the Board of Supervisors can agree on someone. And what's great is if they can't, that's fine. They can leave the position vacant to the next election, or they can call for a special election, and that goes back to the voters. So again, this takes it from the governor getting to do something and puts it back in local control with local people. And people have said, they said, hey, well, why wouldn't it just go to the voters right away? Well, one of the things is if you have a, let's say you have 18 months left or some, you know, wonky amount of time, you can always just leave it vacant and then just go to the regular scheduled election, or you can do a special election. And again, worst case scenario, the Board of Supervisors, the remaining four or the remaining three, because let's say something happens, there's a car accident and two of them are traveling together, then you'd have two supervisor positions that would need to be filled. Again, this is just about local control. So those will both be on the ballot in March. The COVID resolution is something that I sponsored as well. That didn't have that was more symbolic than anything. But what we started to see, and we're going to see again, is you had Huntington Beach, and there was a couple cities that did something very similar. But what this is, and this I think sets Dr. Mu up really well, as well, because as he's looking to make some changes with some of the protocols we have with vaccines, specifically COVID or masks and things of that nature, he knows exactly where our Board of Supervisors stands as it relates to, you know, what we feel as a board majority and it comes to COVID restrictions. So I was happy we got that resolution passed. The at-home program, that was something that Supervisor Garmin brought forth. And again, and I've talked about that pretty extensively the last, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, because we just had the City of Reading, City of Shasta Lake, and the Board of Supervisors adopted what were the five objectives of our at-home program. And that wound up being a program that I didn't really think was going to be very successful, but wound up being a very positive thing locally. Still yet to be determined how it's going to, you know, flesh out at the state. At the state level, because again, that was all about the biggest cities in California driving that initiative. But what we did here locally is we made it our own. And I think that that was a very positive thing. If you paid attention, the City of Reading did adopt it as well. And some of that $8.3 million encampment grant is going to be pushed over towards the mission. And the mission is making some changes to their ways they operate, and the day or the resource center, navigation center, whatever you want to call it, we're going to be as a community partnering with the mission, and the mission is going to oversee that. And then if they basically meet the requirements that the City of Reading put forth over the next 5 years, then they will actually gift them the building. So they have a no interest loan for the building that they were already going to purchase. You know, they'd already identified that place as the best place for a day/resource center. And the county is committed to putting in various levels of support. So again, this place can be a one-stop shop, because if you're familiar with it, at the Civic every year. I think it's called Homeless Connect. There's a big workshop, or there's a, you know, there's a 2 or 3 day period, or maybe it's just 1 day. I went to it this past year, but I went 1 day. I don't remember if it was multiple days or just 1 day, but I believe it served over 300 people in that 1 day. So instead of just making that an annual 1 day or maybe a 2 or 3 day event, I believe it's 1 day, but instead of just making it like a once a year kind of thing, that's what this resource center is going to do. And what the At Home Committee is basically said was, and it was an ad hoc committee of elected officials of all three cities, as well as the Board of Supervisors, the tribe had a representative, as well as some other city and county officials. But this is basically where everybody said, hey, this is what we think is the best way for dollars to move forward, to move the needle for the people that need help in our community. So that's what that did. And then all the jurisdictions are actually going to reappoint people, and that's going to be an ongoing committee, but it's going to be subject to the Brown Act. So that means there'll be public comment and other things, which I welcome, and I think that's a positive thing. So that's going, that happened. So going forward, what I want to do now is I want to spend just a little bit of time going over some of the things that I feel are going to be really important going into 2024, and some of the things that I, as the incoming elected chair, will be focusing on. And again, that that was at our second to last meeting, I believe, in December, where we had that vote, and we'll be chair, and then Supervisor Kellstrom will be the vice chair. One of the things that I really, really want to focus on, or I've been working on for about the past 6 or 7 months, I've been working on it with a little bit with Paul Hellman of resource management, but I've really extensively been working on this with Nolda Short, our auditor controller, is one of the initiatives I have is I really want to focus on the economy and small businesses. It wasn't until I started running for office, and then of course have been in office this first year, where I've really met so many small business owners, and I've heard the stories of, you know, what their life was like pre-COVID, post-COVID, what it's been like doing business in other communities outside of California, and then doing it in California, and then what it's like doing it in Shasta County. So one of the things, obviously, that we have a lot of in this area of California, Northern California, is we have a lot of contractors, a lot of builders, a lot of tradesmen, and a lot of people that rely on growth. And so one of the things I wanted to focus on was I really, really want to focus on how can we make growth easier for the entrepreneur. And I had a friend of mine said, hey, you know, Shasta County should be a sanctuary city for entrepreneurs. So I told him I was going to steal that I want to make Shasta County a sanctuary city, so people can come here knowing that they've got a shot to build their legacy, build the company they want, and Shasta County is going to be a very business-friendly place to come. So as I've worked on some various things with Nolda Short, understanding money and understanding where different fees go at the county, I started to really hone in on impact fees. So I've asked Nolda to do a presentation on January 9th, my first meeting. So I want to invite any contractor that's out there, any person that's, carpenter, any kind of trade, anybody in the building community that wants to come and hear this presentation and actually give your input about things that you've seen in the construction industry as it relates to impact fees, permit fees, etc. Come share your story. I actually have something on my website as well. If you want to fill out a little form, go to votekevincrye.com. Again, vote Kevin Crye, and that's C-R-Y-E. There's a form on there. You can fill it out. And if you can't make the January 9th meeting, fill that form out and just send it in, because I'd love to hear your story as it relates to impact fees, building fees, etc. Because one of the things I've looked at, about 75 pages of documentation here, is I think our impact fees are bogus, basically. And I'll tell you why, is when you look at the studies of population that have been done in Shasta County since the early 2000s, 2004, 2005, 2006, you'll see, if you go to the Shasta County Transportation Agency, and now it's called SRTA, Shasta Regional Transportation Agency, but in about 15, 18 years ago, it was called the Shasta County Regional Transportation Agency. And you look at the study of our population where they estimated we would be. They said Shasta County by the year 2030 would be just under 280,000 people. So I sit on the SRTA board, and I asked Sean, who's our director for some information. He had to go back into basically microfilm and find all this information for me. So I've started to ask the question, who thought that we were going to be 280,000 people? Who was that far off? Because if you look at the U.S. Census Bureau, or you look at USAFacts.org, and again, USAFacts.org pulls most of their information from the U.S. Census Bureau anyway. But you look at the trend in population of Shasta County, and even though it was growing, in the early 2000s when the economy was just raging and people were building like crazy, I still don't understand how people could have assumed that we were going to be at 280,000 people. So they started to set fees and they started to set processes with the assumption that it was going to be, on that trajectory. And you could see very, very quickly that we weren't ever going to come anywhere close to that. Now, I'm going back into the ordinance number of 665, ordinance number 665, and this is in 2008. So May 6th, I'm going back to the board meeting of 2008, May 6th. Supervisors Baugh, Kehoe, Cibula, Hawes, and Hartman passed an ordinance with adopting public facility fees for all new development within the county of Shasta. And as you look at this, and I'd encourage you to open it up and read it and look at it. And again, this is okay. If this is what they thought at the time, that works. Go ahead and pass the ordinance. You see all the supporting document. But here's my question. We're in almost 2024. That's 16 years ago. And we have, Mary Rickard's been on the board for 7 years. This will be her eighth year. And then, pretty much the rest are pretty new, but why hasn't this been revisited? Why have we not looked at this and said, hey, as we look at the impact and the cost of building and infrastructure, why, we're 180,000 people still. We've gone up 3,000 or 4,000 roughly in the last, we're growing about 0.6%. We're growing less than 1% year over year. In 17 and 18, we actually went down. More people moved away and more people died than were born. So we had negative growth in a 3 year span. I believe it was between 15 and 17 or 16 and 18, 16, 17 and 18. But all these numbers to me, so we're going to have this, anyway, let me finish that thought. I asked a question. So we're collecting these fees. We're not really spending it in terms of, it's not making it easier for people to build here in Shasta County. So the only things that we've spent, the only funds that we've spent money on or projects on is the juvenile rehab facility, and that's from the public protection account. We have the South County Fire Station, and then we have the Emergency Operations Center. Those are the three areas that we've spent money on from these impact fees. So my question is why are we charging them still? I think we have enough money in there for a 5 or 6 year run rate to see if we can just spur growth. So, at this point, I'll be making a motion to just terminate impact fees within the county. Now, again, if you live in the city of Anderson, city of Redding, city of Shasta Lake, this is for the areas of the county where the county is the jurisdiction for that. But that's the direction I'm moving at this point, because I think that we definitely need to make it easier on builders. We need to make it easier on people who want to do business and who want to invest here in Shasta County. So, again, if you're a contractor or in the trades, I would definitely recommend you coming to the board meeting on January 9th. Share your story. Tell us how it will impact you. And we'll see where that vote goes. Don't really know at this point, but I know that the work I've done with Nold the Short, I don't think there's any reason why we have to have these impact fees at this point. So moving on from that, the second thing that I'm going to really be focusing on this year is child and family services. I've working with Miguel in mental health, as well as Laura Birch, who's the HHSA director. There's a lot of programs that we have that I believe will complement very well with what the SCOE does. And SCOE is the Shasta County Office of Education. I've worked with a couple people there to see how we can actually use the opioid grant money and how we can take, you know, like the compound effect. If we can start working and directing revenue in a more, I guess you would say, in a manner that just really puts resources and streamlines things together, I look forward to working with. I'm working with Austin right now as well as a couple others. I know that one thing I've always said is kids can't choose their parents, and we really have to do all we can for the kids, because there's a lot of kids hurting in Shasta County. There's a lot of kids hurting in a lot of places. But one thing is kids are not recovering. I don't think anybody thought they were going to recover quickly after what happened through COVID. But kids are far behind, and the kids that are far behind are just falling farther behind. So we have to look at ways that we can join forces, I guess we'd say, and streamline some processes. So I've been working on that, and as chair, that's going to be something that I'm going to bring a lot of attention to, as well as some foster and adoption and just programs to get people, if nothing else, just to be more aware of organizations and people that really, really need some help working with kids. So the next thing will be I'm processing again, looking at Shasta County caucusing as a rural county and getting away from this idea that we're suburban. If you look at the breakdown of counties in California, you have 14 that identify as urban. You have 17 that identify as suburban. You have 27 that identify as rural. My question is, if we were we would be the biggest rural county in the state of California if we were rural. And what that would do is we would also be the biggest county in the largest caucus in the country. That would be rural. And as a suburban county, as we are identified as now, Shasta County is, you know, on the lower end of suburban counties. And if you look back when that process and when that change was made, I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions as to why that shift was made. Now, I can look on paper and say, okay, well, there was grant money available and there was different things that were possible for that. But, you know, when you want to know, when you're realizing you're charting a path of where you want to go, it's important, obviously, to know where you are, but it's also important to know where you came from. And one thing about Shasta County is we are a rural county. We are a rural county in a lot of ways. And when I saw, and again, this is going back to that same SRTA or the Shasta County Transportation Agency document that I saw from 2006, when you see Cottonwood and Happy Valley listed as urban and Shingletown as rural, that's a head scratcher, because I would have never called Cottonwood urban. And part of the reason is, if you look back on that study, there was grant money available. So people can say, "Oh, well, it's important to get the grant money." It's like, well, I don't think it is. I think sometimes money's not the answer, and I think constantly chasing the buck and not embracing who we are as a community, I think, has been part of the problem for so many elected officials. I think they get pushed into what other people want them to do and not really what their constituents or what the electorate wants. And I don't meet many people who don't embrace Shasta County being a rural way of life and a rural community. So that's one of the things in this year, 2024, we're going to be looking at as well. The last thing of the major four is continue to work with HHSA and streamline the services to help the unhoused. One thing I've been really, really impressed with is Laura Birch. You know, she doesn't get she doesn't get as much credit as she deserves, but at the same time, she just wants to do her job. She doesn't want to be recognized for different things. But there's been a couple organizations who have operated outside of their charter or outside of what they're supposed to do and have had to return money to the county. And that stuff's not publicized, because really, at the end of the day, she just wants to get the work done and move it on. But I'll tell you, when we talked about a forensic audit, or, you know, where is all this money going, she's doing that work. And one of the things I'm going to ask her to do in the first quarter, in the first 3 months, is come up and share with what she's done with this internal audit department that she's created to look at contracts and the things that she's found and the changes that she's made, because they're truly great, because it brings accountability. It brings the I don't want to say just the transparency, but it brings the accountability. It brings forth a lot of things that many of us have asked, like, where does all this money go and how do we know it's being spent correctly to actually help people? And she's done that. She's created a couple different positions that are moving in a direction where we can now point to things and say, well, that was done incorrectly and it's been remedied and this is what happens going forward now. So I think that's a really positive thing. So the last thing I'll touch on about this coming year is about public comment. I would love, again, you can email me on my from my website. You can look on there, where votekevincry.com. When you're looking at the section where it talks about impact fees, and if you're a contractor, you can fill that same thing out there if you want and send me an email, because I'd like to hear some of your thoughts about public comment. That's one of the things that people have asked pretty consistently about, and I think Chair Jones had done as good of a job as anybody could do given the situation. And one thing is, I definitely want to still have public comment at the first part of the meeting. One of the things with the presentations and with our department heads, I do like the last few meetings we've had where we have public comment following a couple presentations and maybe one or two of the items that most of the people in attendance want to see. So moving a couple of those up early. It seems to be working really well lately, and we've gotten a lot of positive feedback about that, because a lot of people there for a while weren't coming to the meetings just because they said they're just going to be shut down, and they were just raucous, and they didn't – people just didn't want to come to those. And I don't blame them, because I think what's important is we get the people's work done. And at the same time, what's really important is hearing from the people that we serve. And we're paid to do that, and that's part of the process. So I can guarantee you we'll continue to have public comment early in the meeting, and it won't be moved to the end like some people have suggested. The last thing, one more thing. One other change you're going to notice is we always have the CEO staff report as well as the supervisor reports. I'm going to move that up to the very first thing after the pledge and the prayer. Because I've never understood why we do that report usually after lunch, or maybe sometimes right before lunch, and all we do is we talk about what happened the past 2 or 3 weeks prior. I've never understood why we do all this current stuff and going forward, and then we reflect back on what happened. So I think what's important at the very beginning of the meeting is we talk about all the past stuff, and then everything moves forward going forward. So that's one change I definitely have made and will make. Looking forward to January shows. If you remember, I had Baron Browning and Chris Kellstrom. They were both candidates running for District 5. I had them on my radio show, and I wouldn't say we called it a debate per se, but because they actually agreed on many of the issues. They did have a difference on a couple of the issues as it related to the jail. And I don't remember if we talked about term limits on that. I think they both agreed on term limits as well. But I do remember they had different opinions about the jail. But I'm going to have District 2 candidates, Dr. Dan Sloan and Dr. Laura Hobbs. They're going to come on, I believe, January 7th. And then in District 4, I've had Patrick Jones, or Supervisor Jones, and Matt Plummer both agreed to come on. And at this time, I'm waiting to hear back. Supervisor Rickert did respond and say she is looking to possibly do it. She's got to talk to her team and see if that's something she wants to do. But, of course, Wynn Carpenter in District 3. And I'm not sure. I haven't heard back from Corky Harmon yet. But I will make sure that there may be three on that particular one as well. It would be Corky Harmon, Wynn Carpenter, as well as Mary Rickert. So that would be the next three shows in January. One of the things I think is important is that people get engaged, and I like to use my platform to bring people together to have an opportunity to talk about things that are important to them. The last thing is, of course, the recall election in March is March 5th as well. Of course, vote no on the recall. Signs are going up, and I do appreciate all the support I'm getting. I was in Costco the other day, and there was an older older couple from Bernie. I'm going to guess they're probably in their late 60s, maybe early 70s. And the lady comes over and kind of tugs on my sweatshirt. And I turn around, and her husband's waving at her to leave me alone. And I introduce myself, and she introduces herself and just said that her church and her friends are praying for me and my family and just appreciate the work we've done. That always makes me feel really good, just like when I'm at the gym, because this recall is nothing more than sore losers who didn't get their way at the ballot box. So this is their way of trying to take the county over and have their buddy Gavin Newsom appoint who they think they would want. But I believe Shasta County is going to step up, and I am very – that's my timer. Look at that. And you hear the music coming. So now that means I am out of time. Shasta County, I appreciate you, and I'm thankful for you. It has been a great 2023, and we will see you on the other side in 2024. Again, thank you for listening, and have a great day.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by